Welcome to OnkLive On Air. I'm your host today, Ashlyn Wehner. OnkLive On Air is a podcast from OnkLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OnkLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Sanofi, we pass the mic to Joseph McHale, MD, a professor in the Applied Cancer Research and Drug Discovery Division at the Translational Genomics Research Institute and Chief Medical Officer of the International Myeloma Foundation. Dr. McHale moderated an OnkLive Insights workshop discussion on addressing disparities and practicing multicultural care in myeloma. Dr. McHale was joined by Craig Cole, MD, an assistant professor in the Division of Hematology and Oncology in the Department of Medicine in the College of Human Medicine at Michigan State University in East Lansing. Dr. Cole is also a clinician at Karmanos Cancer Institute at McLaren Greater Lansing in Lansing, Michigan. In this exclusive conversation, Drs. McHale and Cole discussed ways to help reduce disparities in myeloma by delivering culturally relevant care. In particular, they highlighted the importance of implementing shared decision-making, creating a well-informed multidisciplinary staff, and meeting patients where they are culturally and socially.
Hello, and welcome to this OnkLive Insights titled Addressing Disparities and Practicing Multicultural Care in Myeloma. My name is Dr. Joseph McHale. I'm a professor at the Translational Genomics Research Institute and the Chief Medical Officer of the International Myeloma Foundation. It's a particular pleasure today to be joined by my dear friend and esteemed colleague, Dr. Craig Cole. I'll let Craig introduce himself.
So my name is Craig Cole, and I'm at Michigan State University Karmanos Cancer Institute in Lansing, Michigan.
It's always great to have you with us, Craig, and I really look forward to this discussion. And just to sort of set the context here, we all recognize that there are dramatic health disparities in all of health within this country and in many other places, of course, but in particular with multiple myeloma, a disease where, in particular, African Americans are affected by this disease at twice the incidence and yet have a dramatically reduced survival compared to white Americans. And yet, when we think of the complexity of this problem, there are so many different things that we can do to try and reduce these health disparities, whether it's at the level of systemic racism, of the social determinants of health, a socioeconomic phenomenon, access to specific care through clinical trials or through transplants. We've identified so many of these problems through these programs and in many others to recognize that if this is going to be fixed, it's going to take a lot of work from every stakeholder. But specifically today, we want to focus in on the practicing hematologist, oncologist in the community. They may look at all of these solutions and say, well, what can I do about it? What practical things can I do day to day in my clinic that can help me care for patients in a more competent manner? What can I do that is going to help reduce the health disparity as opposed to potentially even contribute to it?
A question that I get a lot is how can I deliver culturally competent care? And really what culturally competent care is more about shared decision-making, that each of us are bicultural. We have the culture that we grew up with, and then we have the majority culture, that is the medical culture, a very westernized construct. And our patients have their beliefs, their spirituality, ethnicity. They have to twist that to fit the majority culture. Why can't we meet our patients and have a better understanding of where they're coming from? And not that someone would be able to come to the Cole family dinner and be able to hang out with my family all day, but it's more knowing where I come from and meeting me with my culture and your culture so that we interlock a bit more and I don't have to twist so much in order to meet the majority culture that medicine is founded on. So it's really understanding your patient's experience and building rapport and being curious about where your patient's coming from and how do they interpret their condition, knowing how to give information, what kinds of information is desired. And it doesn't have to be all at once. We do it piecemeal, one by one, part by part. I understand where they're coming from and I meet those expectations, but I don't have to do it all at once. assess the decision-making preferences. That can be different based on age and race and ethnicity. And really thinking about that instead of giving this a blanket statement to all of our patients. Understand the patient's belief and values. Know what's important to them and their loved ones. Again, engaging the greater family, not only for enrollment in clinical trials, but to discuss them having cancer and the therapy and making sure they address your spiritual concerns and emotional concerns. A lot of patients are shy about doing that, but to deliver that holistic care, we need to be aware of that patients may have different spiritual concerns than what we have. Address trust concerns and address resources and needs. Asking patients, do they have everything that they need, and address concerns about the plan.
Let me ask you a question. You know, you so beautifully described the culturally competent care, although I will take it as an invitation to come to the Cole family dinner, by the way. I do look forward to that. But can you give us a very specific, concrete example? Like, give an example that may help a clinician who says, how is it that I meet that patient halfway, as you've described, that I don't make them conform into my mold, but I reach out to those molds? Can you give us a specific example that may help?
Yes. In fact, I can give you a case presentation of a patient that I had enrolled in a clinical trial. He was Native American, and he came into the clinic. You know, we talked about his myeloma, about enrolling him on a clinical trial. And I just kind of went through my usual steps. He was a second opinion, and he wanted to talk about clinical trials. So I really didn't explore where he was coming from so much as much I was going through the process, which was probably my mistake. That was my mistake. This is the earlier me when I had hair. And so I gave him the consent form, and he was like, yeah, I'm really interested in this clinical trial. Let me take it home and read it. But he said he really wanted to be involved in it. And then he came back and he said, well, I really don't want to be on the clinical trial. And I asked him why. And he said, well, I talked to the tribe and my family, and they don't think that it's right for me. And I realized my mistake was that I did not take a better social history and get a better idea of the construct that he was coming from, how much he needed his extended family to be involved in the decision making. And he came to all of his appointments alone. And I realized that that was my mistake, that I really should have just gotten more for social history. I should have said, so when you make, you know, clinical decisions, who do you discuss those decisions with, is what I should have asked when I had first met him. When you are talking to your family about this clinical trial, who are you going to discuss that with? I didn't think about that, my younger self. I said, can you invite your family and people of the tribe to discuss the clinical trial? So we got a room. We had about 7 chairs, and everyone came in. I discussed the clinical trial, and they were all, of course, this is really good for him. But they needed to hear that. And my mistake was that I really should have thought about that. And now I do. When I sit across from my patient, I ask a social history, and I ask, you know, when we discuss these different medications, who are you going to discuss that with? And I do the talk back. So when you talk to your family, how would you describe the things that we talked about today?
I think that's brilliant, Craig. It's a great example, one that I think many of us have had your same experience. I can think of an example of a patient very similarly. And, you know, there's often many times where someone has someone in their family for any important medical decision making, whether it's a clinical trial, a bone marrow transplant, or even just a change in therapy. And I think nowadays with technology as we have it, sometimes we can do it in real time. I had a patient the other day who said, you know, I don't really make any decisions without my uncle, because his uncle had a medical background. And I said, well, let's bring your uncle in. He says, well, would it be okay to call him right now? I'm like, well, yeah. We got him on FaceTime right there in the clinic. Because sometimes it will take more time and it will take more effort. And I think sometimes that scares people a little bit, but it's so important that we meet people where they are. And I think this notion that you describe of making sure that we're meeting people where they are, not just expecting them to come to us. You know, the whole medical system is built on that premise. You know, we're in the higher chair, they're in the lower chair. They're waiting for us in our waiting room. We're surrounded by degrees behind us, and they're put in a weakened position. And so I think that's critical. The other point that I want to emphasize that you made that I think was beautiful, Craig, was obviously when we think about maybe a smaller community oncology office, it's not as straightforward, but just being sensitive to the fact of as people walk into our clinic and as they see whoever's at the front desk and whoever checks their vitals and brings them into the room, if there's no one that looks at all like themselves, you know, that can be a challenge. Yeah. And we're not trying to set some artificial limit or line, but, you know, how often have we found when the other healthcare professionals in our profession, you know, we've learned that within specifically, for example, the African-American community, there is as much trust in nurses and pharmacists as there are in physicians. Absolutely. And so being able to recognize that, you know, Dr. Cole can say one thing, but when the nurse comes in and has that discussion, when the pharmacist comes in and has that discussion. And so I know that for a lot of the community oncologists, it's harder for them to have a larger team. But I know that in my practice, I've leveraged that very much, being able to come from different angles to help reestablish some of that trust. I expect that's part of what you do in your work, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there was a paper that was written by the AACR that looked at patients. They were given consent forms and why they returned them and didn't enroll in clinical trials. And one of the reasons was that they said that the doctor never wanted me on it. And they inquired, why would the doctor give you a consent form but didn't want you to be on it? And it's because that patient would talk to the nurses and they would say, I don't know about clinical trials. And they would talk to the MAs, I don't know about clinical trials. They really held the nurses and EMAs in very high regard. So they didn't know. So when we have our clinical trials, we have all in that we have the nurses, the EMAs, everybody knows about clinical trials. So if a patient says, what about this clinical trial Dr. Cole was talking about? They're like, oh yeah, I remember him talking about that. And so it helps to, again, to have that bigger idea that it's not the nuclear family, but it is the community.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your insights today, Craig. I mean, I've learned from you as I always do. I hope that our audience has appreciated some of these things. You know, it makes me think of the advice my father gave me the day I got accepted to medical school. He was a brilliant physician trained in Africa. And he said, you know, Joe, you are made with two ears and one mouth for a reason. And I really do think that it is important for us to listen. And I think a lot of the history, as you described, was because there wasn't an appropriate listening ear to our patient. And I think for the practicing clinician today, it may sound straightforward, but listening to your patient, you know, I've reached a point, Craig, I got to tell you right now, and my staff tease me about it. I always start with the social history. I want to know the name of the patient's pets. I want to know what they do for fun. You know, building that not only immediate trust, but then you can see a little bit more through their eyes what their experience is, I think is a big part of what we're trying to promote in this program today. So yeah. Thanks, Craig, for your tremendous insight as always. We trust for the listeners today that you've enjoyed this Onc Live Insights discussion. We trust it'll help you as you care for your patients in a multicultural manner, that it would just sensitize you to some things that we can do. So often we're guided by our own unconscious bias. And as we make these things more aware, hopefully it'll provide better care to your patients. So thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate very much.
Thank you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air, sponsored by Sanofi. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onc Live is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onc Live and at Onc Live SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onc Live and Onc Live State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onc Live page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Onc Live On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.